This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and our special guest today is Mike O'Neill. Mike's a friend and a workout partner. He's owner of O'Neill Property Management in Riverside. And Mike is also a very successful buy and hold real estate investor. Mike, we welcome you back to our show.
Glad to be here.
I'm just curious because sometimes when I talk with people that are property holders, somehow they had an entrepreneurial bent when they were growing up. So did you have, were you an entrepreneur in any way when you were growing up?
Always wanted to be an entrepreneur, even in high school. So when I was in high school, I was already doing sprinkler systems, paint jobs, any type of work I could do besides the regular jobs that I had that I was working for somebody else. So, yeah, I guess I liked it from the very beginning.
That's cool. At what age did you start taking karate?
At 15.
Wow. And how would you say your participation in karate impacted your life?
Well, in about every way. I mean, confidence, learning how to handle failure, success, relying on other people when you needed them there, creating lifetime friendships, learning to have your mind and your body work together. I mean, lots of things, really. Yeah. Lots of things.
You know, what's interesting is that, you know, you took karate early in your life and I took it later. And so this is why I'm asking the next question. Has you owning a business in any way helped you in martial arts?
I think martial arts probably has helped me more in owning my business.
Okay. But I think...
I owning your business, certainly you develop a lot of... you learn a lot about people and you learn to deal with adversity. But I first started with a lot of those things with karate. But I think they kind of work hand in hand, actually.
Yeah. You know, when I got serious about it in my 50s, and I think, you know, I had attempted karate when I was early 20s, and I just wasn't ready for it. And there was... So there was a missing element of discipline and understanding it was a process, and somehow becoming successful in business and knowing that it took a while and that it was, you know, like the victory usually went to the person that was slow and steady and understood that you were going to gain a little skill at a time before you got better. I learned that in business, and it allowed me to implement that in karate when I took it. So it's just interesting. It helped, business helped me in karate. It actually really did.
There you go. I mean, I think they help each other both ways. I mean, I don't think anybody started a business where they haven't struggled along the way. And for me, I picked up a little bit of that with the martial arts and some other areas, but, you know, every person I think that succeeded in business has had their share of trials to get there.
Yes. How old were you when you became interested in real estate?
High school, 16, 17, somewhere around there. I always was interested in the business world, and real estate fascinated me. Still does.
Yeah, I know it does. So at what age did you own your first home, and was it a residence or a rental?
The first property I bought was a triplex on Mulberry with my brother Chuck. He was a couple years older than me, and I was a senior in high school. I was not yet 17 or 18 when we put it into escrow.
Okay.
I guess you could say 17.
Wow. And the intent was you weren't going to live in that. That was going to be a rental.
That was going to be a rental, and it was a rental. It was a rental for us for several years, maybe 15, 20. That was one of the few properties I ever sold, and I sold it to a gentleman named Mark Levi, who was living there, and he still owns the property.
That's funny. You referred to several years as 15 to 20.
Yeah, that was a short term holding.
Yeah, I'm serious. What percentage of properties that you've owned do you still own, do you think?
Well, I've sold three.
Three.
So wow. Over my lifetime, and one of them was a house that I lived in, and moved to the house I'm in right now. That I was there for 25 years. So I've sold two rentals.
You know what's fascinating is I bought into the wrong philosophy, and I've had a lot of success, but it's interesting that the people that have a lot of wealth touched probably 1/15 of the houses that I did in my life.
Well, in all fairness, Bruce, your job was to turn property.
Well, no.
That's what your company is really kind of involved with.
Well, I know, but, you know, it's sort of like when, but it was a mindset. It was a mindset, and it was an inaccurate mindset. So, you know, like in Moreno Valley during the 90s, there were times to buy fourplexes for $60,000. Which I did. I bought several dozen of them. Those translated into $500,000, but not for me. They turned into $130,000 when I sold them. So that was always tempting for me to say, well, you know, why would I want to hassle with a rental and get $500 a month extra? You know, and I just that philosophy, it took me a long time and hanging around a guy named Jack Fullerton who finally convince me, you know, you ought to keep some of that stuff. And but it's just one of those things that you get sold on one kind of one or the other, it seems. But I can just say that most of the people that won in the long range kept a lot of properties and didn't touch a lot of them compared to flippers. So it's a good thing to think about if you're thinking that you're going to land on one square or the other. It's a really good skill to end up having both sides of it.
Well, you hold on to properties for all your life. You only get one shot at being right or wrong about doing that. So, you know, a lot of people that have bought and sold and done this type of thing, I completely understand it. I completely understand it. It seemed to me at the time that if I held them long enough, I'd eventually pay off the mortgages and I would have income. That income would allow me to buy more investments instead of continuing to borrow. It just was a different philosophy.
Yeah. Did you always manage your own property?
Oh, yeah. I became a full-time property manager at 23. So before that, my brother and I owned most of the properties together when I first started. We started buying properties together, mostly because he could qualify for the loans. And, you know, we were getting into something. It's always nice to have somebody else there. And we divided up the duties of it. And my job was basically doing the dealings with the tenant and the property. He handled the bookkeeping and the money and that type of stuff in the beginning. And, you know, as time went by, I wanted to get more and more aggressive, and he didn't. So we eventually, you know, went in different ways. And we split up the properties that we owned. He would take one, I took one. And I think he's sold some of his, but I think he's even got one of the original properties himself still.
Okay. What attracted you to property management? Because, you know, as far as the hats you can wear in the real estate world, not a lot of people choose that hat. So why did you go there? Was it because you knew you were going to own a fair amount of them?
Exactly. You're right on the nail head, right there. And the first property I bought it from Century 21 Riverside Realty. Guy named Dennis Bunch from many, many, many years ago. And he had a little property management division. And I used to call him all the time and ask him questions. And I was getting more and more into it. I was taking real estate classes and, you know, working my job during the day, like everybody does who gets into real estate. And he asked me if I wanted to be a property manager. The properties he had were not very many, and he just had a bookkeeper handling it at the time, and that's kind of how I fell into it.
Okay. If you were to select a property manager from scratch, what are some of the things you'd look for?
If I was going, I didn't hear that one word.
Okay, from scratch. So if you were
scratch,
yeah, which we're doing in Florida, you know, we're interviewing property managers and going through the process of finding out if what they're telling us is accurate. So what do you look for your?
Well, I'd first want to find out what systems they use to do accounting. You know, are they up to date? Are they automated? Everything is now online based, and most tenants are used to doing that, and most owners like it too. Makes for a lot easier. But even more important than that, what's their philosophy on properties? Are they hands on? Do they go to the property? Do they talk to the tenants? Do you get voicemail when you call their office, or does somebody pick it up? I mean, your property manager, people might be calling with emergencies. It doesn't seem to me that it's the right place to have to go through three or four prompts to get somebody to talk to you.
It's so funny you said that. It's so funny. We dealt with one in Florida, and they had all the – so you even said it right. This company had all the systems in place. I mean, when there was a threat of a hurricane, you got a 30-page memo that said, here's what you do. And then when you call in, it was a voicemail that didn't come on until the 20th ring. And you're kind of going, wow. And it was an interesting process to understand that a company could come across so well and yet they decided not to be personally involved. It was systems, and that doesn't work.
I agree. I tell you, you want a rule of thumb. In the future, if any of your clients are looking for a property manager, I mean, sometimes you're going to fall into voicemail. But even if you do, how quickly do they get back to you if that happens? You know, are we talking minutes, hours? I mean, if it's not minutes, there's a real problem. We're not in one of those kinds of businesses where you can call me today and I'll call you back tomorrow type of thing. It just doesn't work. And maybe it's because we're not the largest company in the world, but most people I deal with are very unhappy with you if you're not dealing with them really in the same first half of a day if you're not solving their problems.
Absolutely. Do you feel that it's really helpful for them to own their own properties?
Who to own their own property?
The management company, the person like you. In other words, you're not. It's not theory to you. You're involved in it up to your eyeballs.
I think that you don't really understand property management unless you do it. It's like, you know, it's one of those things that if you've not been involved, if you've not had a plumbing leak in the middle of the night, if you've not had a vacancy that you've had trouble renting that you own, it's hard for you to completely understand what your clients are going through, and your tenants, for that matter. Yes, I think I don't know that it's a necessity, but I think it's a definite plus that they have tried to do what they're doing for their clients. You know, that they own some rentals, so they understand what their clients are doing. And, what's their philosophy to tenants, too? I mean, tenants are important. I mean, you got to treat them with respect. You don't always give them everything they want, but you treat them with respect. If they got a problem, you take care of it quickly. If you make a mistake, you say you're sorry. I mean, you know, and a lot of that has to do with wanting to keep the customer happy. and knowing that that is your customer that you're keeping happy. And if you don't keep them happy, there are other places for them to go.
You know, in the last cycle, I would say since, say, the 2008 when real estate really crashed, there's been an influx in the next 11 years of very, very sizable companies that first entered into the trustee sale buying business, and then they started keeping properties, and then they got into the hard money loan business, and then they got in the property management business. So are those competitors that are in California, did property management companies show up with and kind of challenge the rate schedule? And how has that impacted your business?
I'm going to have to say not a whole lot for what I do. My rate structure has definitely been squeezed some, but not from these huge companies. My bigger problem is what I call the mom-and-pop property managers, the real estate agents that want to handle 10 or 12 so that they can, pay some personal bills and what have you. They'll do it at whatever price they have to get a little extra income. They generally don't have overhead. They generally don't have employees. It's generally they're fitting it in around their regular job. And for that, it's like moonlighting. And they have created a little bit of a problem, especially in the internet age, where they can get out there and advertise things that I know are well below what the actual cost of doing it is. But the big companies, I don't know that they're really that interested in a guy that manages, houses, condos, and small units. They may, in some instances, go into an area and buy a lot of single-family residents, but I don't know that they really want to manage one house for one family and have to deal with them on a one-on-one basis. That's a little bit time-consuming for those ones that are trying to get the large efficiencies. Hope that answered your question. Yeah, different than I think you thought it would be.
You're the one that knows this business. So here's the next question: was when people get their first rental, and it's very common that investors really attempt the management side on their own to save money. And what's your thought on that?
Well, as crude as it sounds, Bruce, we always chuckle that we'll get them after they screw up.
Well,
because they want to save the money. They want to save that management fee. In a lot of cases, that management fee is coming out of their pocket because they don't necessarily have enough rent to cover all their commitments.
Well, that's funny because when you went to the one house, you knew the market and rental a lot better than I did, and the price you said that we would get, I was floored. I had no idea it had changed that much. So I would have never even thought of asking the number that we got literally in a day. So that was interesting. What do you think?
Well, the good news about a property manager that's doing his job is, A, he's going to try to get you the highest rent you can. Because if he's a good property manager, he wants his clients to succeed, and he wants to succeed too. So we set all our fees based on getting paid a percentage of what the owner gets paid. So we're in this. We're the small teammate. You're the large teammate. We should work in unison. And we will also discuss with owners raising rents, which a lot of small owners don't like to raise rents. They're afraid a tenant's going to move. But if you're aware of the market, you know what you can raise the rent and normally not have a tenant move. And if you don't raise the rents, you go 4 or 5 years of not raising the rents, then you got to replace the roof. And then you're going, oh my God, I got to replace the roof. It's $5,000. But had we raised the rent incrementally during those 5 years, we probably would have collected that much more or more in rent.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have been nearly as difficult.
I'm going to give you some choices of properties, and you tell me your preference, or if the category is you've just learned, I would completely stay away from it. Condo, okay. Condo versus house.
Prefer condo over house. I mean, house over condo.
Oh, well, I thought, what? Okay. Okay.
House over condo. The association dues are one of the main reasons, and the people that manage in those associations, every customer is a tenant and an owner. There's no defined, you know, boundaries, and they just don't appreciate as fast.
Two story versus one.
One story.
Okay. Size.
Not a big preference, though. I live in a two-story.
Right.
I mean, but I think that a one-story is probably a little easier to market, and maybe gets a tad more in rent.
Square foot, preferable size.
Square footage. Yeah. Square footage was the question.
Yes. What size is preferable?
You don't want too small and you don't want too big. And I like somewhere around a minimum of 1,300. And once you get over 2,400, you're not getting much efficiency and rental income for the extra square footage. I mean, it becomes a diminished return as the house gets larger to the point where there's a smaller market that wants to rent to it.
Okay. Yard size?
Not too big. Not too small. just a yard. It's easy to maintain. Not going to, you know, whether you hire a gardener or you have the tenant do it, you don't want to have it be something that is going to take a long time to maintain on a weekly basis. Give me some grass and some bushes at the edge and maybe a tree or two and I'm happy.
Like a duplex, fourplex versus a single family.
Oh boy, I own both, and pluses and minuses. A house, they tend to stay longer. They tend to appreciate a little bit faster, and you can get maybe a stronger qualified person there.
Okay.
Okay. Multiple units, the bigger they get, the quicker the income stream, the total income stream increases, which means you'll probably get cash flow to the investor quicker. You're going to have a little bit more turnover, but every time you raise the rent on a multiple unit building, you've increased the value. Not necessarily on houses. Houses are basically comparatively more driven by what the other house similar to yours is sold for in the area.
Okay, we've got one more minute. I'll try to squeeze two questions. Right now, the competition for available rentals in Riverside?
Oh, what's the answer? We're in a tight rental market. We're in a little bit of a lull this time of the year, but we still only have, I think, four or five rentals available right now. Historically low numbers.
Okay, and impact of rent control?
Moderate, just more, I think, a nuisance. I don't like the just cause eviction clauses. They're going to end up with a lot of things in court. Most of my clients don't raise their rents more than we have the maximum rent. It's somewhere between 7.6 and 8.1, depending on what index you do. Most of my clients keep their rent increases at around 3-5% on most cases.
Okay. Well, Mike, we are done. I really appreciate you taking time. I know you have a very busy day today, so thank you for doing this.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
All right, Mike. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.